Good afternoon, everyone. I'm sorry to spoil your fun. You're having a nice conversation, but I guess we're supposed to get started again. So I'm going to be trying to answer the question, can forage tannins reliably improve protein and nitrogen utilization on confinement dairy farms? I'm going to focus on confinement dairy farms. There's been a lot of wonderful work done in grazing systems, what tannin-containing forages can do in those systems. I won't be covering that today, just focusing on our work on confinement dairy forage production systems. Before I go any further, I really need to acknowledge and thank just some of the many people that have been working on these projects. I've had some great technicians through the years, most recently Matt Volanek working with me on the project. Maybe point out a few scientists, Wayne Koblenz and Glenn Broderick, especially have contributed to a lot of the work that I've done here. But lots of other people are listed, and some people, I appreciate their contributions so much that I listed them twice here. Isn't it something when you make up slides, you proofread them, and then you look at them just before your talk and say, what's that doing there? But anyway, lots of people to thank, so I just happen to be the mouthpiece today. So, can forages containing modest amounts of tannin, and I'm thinking about 1 to 3% of dry matter, improve protein and nitrogen utilization on confinement farms? I'm saying 1 to 3% because ideally we'd like to have tannins that are highly active at very low concentrations in the dry matter. And I mean active in terms of the properties that we're looking for. Because as you get more and more tannin in a feed or in the diet, it's really diluting out other nutrients that the cow is needing to utilize for production. So low concentrations, highly active are what we would like. And the answer is probably yes. So with that, I'll take questions. I didn't want to run over. Anyway, I suppose you want a few more slides, so I did bring a few more to try and substantiate this probably yes. Well, we do have a problem in many of our dairy forage systems in North America for feeding dairy cattle, and that is we have some wonderful forages that have a lot of protein in them, like alfalfa, but when we ensile them or make hay with them or feed them to a cow, a lot of that great protein that a farmer works so hard to produce and harvest gets degraded and broken down into non-protein nitrogen products. And so you might feed a 20% crude protein alfalfa to a cow, but the cow's gastrointestinal tract only sees maybe a 4% protein content from the alfalfa, the rest of it having been degraded. And the residual proteins in alfalfa that are left, the nutritional value isn't that great. Now, not all is lost because degraded proteins, there's a lot of bacteria growing in the rumen. Those use those non-protein nitrogen products for growth. And the bacterial protein is a great source of protein to support milk production or growth of livestock. But if you have too much of the non-protein nitrogen, the excess gets excreted in urine, maybe up to about a third if you've got a lot of alfalfa in the diet. The urea excretion comes at a metabolic cost to the animal. The ammonia that's excreted in manure can be lost to the environment and not recycled through crop systems, so that's a concern. And because of this inefficient use of protein and alfalfa and some other forages, a lot of times farmers substitute in protein supplements to use other types of crops. And this is at an extra cost and can lead to more nitrogen being fed through an animal and further exacerbate losses and costs. So we'd like proteins to be utilized more efficiently in alfalfa and other forages. Now, low concentrations of condensed tannins can enhance forage protein utilization. And Wayne and Irene mentioned that the tannins can bind to proteins, hydrogen bonding, hydrophobic interactions, and these are partly or mostly reversible under the acidic or mildly alkaline conditions of the lower gastrointestinal tract. So that's why you can protect protein in the rumen, but potentially have more protein digested in the lower GI tract. Okay, so let's take a look at some benefits that feeding a tannin-containing forage, in this case, Birdsfoot trefoil, and I'm going to be using Birdsfoot trefoil as the model tannin forage throughout my talk because it has that roughly 1 to 3% dry matter concentration of tannins. And this is the first feeding trial that we did with Birdsfoot trefoil. The protein and fiber content of the trefoil matched up quite nicely with alfalfa, so we mixed them into total mix rations. The legumes made up about 60% of the diet. The protein content of the diet was about 17% with about 28% neutral detergent fiber. And as you can see, the feed intake was not influenced by the type of forage that we included in the diet, but milk yields did increase quite substantially as we included Birdsfoot trefoil that had progressively higher levels of tannin in the diet. And so when we went from alfalfa to Birdsfoot trefoil that had the highest level of condensed tannin in the diet, we had about a 5 kilo increase in milk production from the cattle. And when we analyzed the forages, what we found is when we went from alfalfa to the highest tannin-containing Birdsfoot trefoil, the amount of rumen undegradable protein, this is protein not degraded in the rumen that can flow to the lower GI tract for utilization, went up quite substantially. So we saw a nice increase in milk production, and that corresponded with more protein flowing to the lower digestive tract. Now, there are two other studies that we've done. They're not summarized, unfortunately, enough for me to share the data with you, but the results weren't quite as dramatic. And and in some cases, as we went from the low to the high tannin trefoil, the milk production increased and then declined a bit. So it's just not a matter of feeding a tannin-containing forages and you've got it, more milk production. There's a lot more involved there. I just want to briefly mention this. Mark Powell will be talking about this in greater detail a little bit later. But when we fed these diets with these different forages in them, what we found through using the use of these laboratory instruments to measure or estimate what barn loss, barn floor losses of ammonia would be, or losses from soil when the manure slurry was applied, what we found is when we switched from an alfalfa-based diet to diets that had Birdsfoot trefoil, we had a reduction in the amount of ammonia loss. And there's less urea excreted when the Birdsfoot trefoil was fed in the diets, and lower loss of ammonia when these manures were applied to field or when we mimicked what would happen on a barn floor. So cows are making more milk with the Birdsfoot trefoil that has tannins, and less nitrogen is being excreted in urine that's volatile, susceptible to loss to environment. So these are good things that we'd like to see on farms. We did additional studies, Mark and I, and we took the manure slurries that were collected from the feeding trial. These were applied to cropland over several years of manure amendments. And then corn was grown. We took a look at the recovery of nitrogen from the manure and really didn't see any effect of switching from an alfalfa to a Birdsfoot trefoil diet. So at least in this study, it didn't look like the presence of the tannins affected the availability of nitrogen to a crop like corn. But we just did this for 2 years. There's a lot of nitrogen. There's a large nitrogen pool in the soil. So it may be that we'd have to continue doing this type of trial over an extended period, a number of years, to be able to see an effect. But there isn't a dramatic effect, at least 2 years. We also, when you're thinking about producing tannin-containing forages on farms, you're not only feeding them to cattle and dealing with the manure that comes from the cattle, but you've also got the crop rotation aspects to think about. And on many farms, of course, we're growing legumes for forage for several years, and then stands are terminated and, you know, a following crop like corn or, in this case, sorghum sedan grass is grown. And so here we're interested to take a look at, do the tannins affect the cycling of nitrogen in a crop rotation? Now, maybe you'll note that the tannin levels are quite a bit lower here. This is the same germplasm that we had used in the feeding trials, but it turned out that in the early spring, when we terminated the stands, and here's after the herbicide is applied, you might think, boy, those are kind of ugly looking stands, John. Well, they looked better a few days earlier, but you know, they're dying back from the herbicide application. In the spring, when these were killed, tannin levels were really quite low, and there's quite a seasonal variation in tannin expression. So the long and the short of it is that when we harvested the sorghum sedan grass for 2 years, two harvests per year, you know, visually you might say, oh, maybe the tannins in the trefoil reduced nitrogen availability, but we only saw a significant effect in the second harvest of the first year. So nitrogen cycling, at least in this experiment, was not greatly influenced by the presence of tannins in birdsfoot trefoil. Years ago, before we initiated these studies, we did sort of a little bit fancier than a back-of-the-envelope calculation, trying to estimate what might be the benefits of tannin-containing forages in a dairy farm. And we just wanted to get some idea, you know, can we quantify or can we predict what the benefits might be? And it turns out probably a lot of the guesstimates that we've used in the model were fairly accurate. And I'll just show you some of the results in a minute. The integrated farm system model attempts to look at all aspects of a dairy farm, you know, from forage production, harvest, storage, utilization by the cow, and then recycling back on cropland. It looks at products like milk and so forth. And when we ran the model with some of our best guesses as to what tannins would do, what we found, or what the model was suggesting, is that, yeah, if you fed a tannin-containing forage, and assuming the yields of the forage were not affected by, you know, having the tannin trait present, just the tannin being present, you'd have an increase in the net return per cow. There would be some increase in milk production. And in the model, it compensates for, let's say, inefficient protein use by alfalfa by feeding more protein supplements. And so that's why the milk production differences are much smaller here than in the feeding trial, where we just substituted the forage and made no other change. So we may still get some benefit in milk production, but really where the profitability is coming about is in the other types of feed ingredients that are needed in the diet. When you have tannins present and protein used more efficiently, you can get away with feeding less protein sources like soybean. So you have reduction in soybean fed to the cows, some increase, about an equal magnitude increase in the amount of corn fed, because soybeans not only provide protein, but they're also an energy source for cattle. So you're substituting energy that used to be provided by the soybean. And if you've looked at crop prices over the long haul, you know that soybeans are a lot more expensive than corn. So that's probably what's driving a lot of the net return gains that we're seeing. It's just we're substituting components in the diet. Corn is a lot less expensive than protein, or soybean rather, and so you get those gains in profitability, and there's a prediction that we have less nitrogen loss from the farm, mainly because less ammonia is lost from the manure. So, it sounds pretty good, but is it ready to, you know, hit the street, so to speak? Well, we do have some issues that we have to overcome, and that is, if we're going to make use of existing tannin-containing forages like birdsfoot trefoil, we've got to do things like improve their yield. On a lot of sites, and this is from a study done with a number of people that are present today, we looked at yields of a number of birdsfoot trefoil varieties, and in general, their yields were about only two-thirds that of alfalfa. So you have a real yield hit if you go with birdsfoot trefoil instead of alfalfa in many environments. But we did see that there are some varieties that gave us better yields than some of the standbys that have been used in North America for a long time. And, you know, Lotar is no spring chicken, so to speak. It's from the Czech Republic, and I don't know how old it is, 20 or 30 years old, that variety. But for some reason, it persists much better in our environment. So there's not been a lot done in terms of birdsfoot trefoil breeding, but if it is done, yield is one issue to address. Okay, I guess I went the wrong way. Sorry about that. Of course, what would be sort of a dream forage for a lot of producers is, gee, if you could get tannin in alfalfa, because you've got a high-yielding legume that doesn't produce tannin now, but a lot of people have been working on that for many decades. And there seems to be a lot of promise that there may be transgenic alfalfas developed that will express tannins in the leaves and give us the protein protection that we're looking for to enhance utilization of protein. But the big question is, can we get optimal concentrations? We're not really sure what those are yet, but can we get them and maintain good agronomic characteristics of the crop? So we've got some issues in terms of the existing forages, tannin-containing forages, their yield. We're trying to get tannins in alfalfa. There are many folks working on that. So let's say we get that accomplished. Is the work done? Well, we have some other things that will make it a challenge to utilize these forages or potentially be a challenge. This is, again, from another study done with a number of folks in attendance here. We grew Birdsfoot trefoil varieties, 14 of them, in four different states, and they're 10 state harvest combinations. And what we're looking at is the relationship between condensed tannin on a dry matter basis and the observed rumen degradable protein, the amount of protein that should be flowing to the lower gastrointestinal tract. And what you notice is that there is a relationship between tannin content and the amount of this rumen undegradable protein, but you'll also notice that there's quite a shift in the intercept. So there's a lot of other factors other than just tannin content that influences the amount of rumen degradable protein that's in a forage. And as Irene indicated, some forage varieties or species seem to have more stable tannin expression than others. But even if that's the case, there's probably other factors that are influencing protein degradability that will have to be taken care of or kept in mind as we try to feed these forages to cattle. Well, there's some other factors that influence protein degradability. In addition to tannins, we've kind of looked at this relationship before, that as you increase tannin, you get more rumen undegradable protein. Well, the processing of forages also affects the amount of rumen undegradable protein that's in the forage. And here's an example where you'd have conventional roll conditioning at harvest versus a maceration of the forage at harvest, so you get this sort of pasty-looking stuff. There's a lot of cell breakage occurring. And you can see this maceration by itself has quite an impact in increasing rumen undegradable protein. And just to note, when we macerated these forages that had differing amounts of tannins, there wasn't sort of any kind of interaction. So the maceration effect was independent of what the tannins were doing in terms of increasing rumen undegradable protein. And of course, if you conserve forages, hay, or silage, that also affects the amounts of rumen undegradable protein. So rumen undegradable protein, we want to get more of that to the lower GI tract. There's a lot of things that are influencing the amount of that is present in the forage, and these are things that we've got to get a handle on if we're going to make use of these forages. And so, it may be that if we get optimal tannin expression, stable amounts of tannin in a forage, the desirable amounts, and we know how to manage these forages properly, we should be able to reduce a lot of this variation in protein degradability. And if we can do that, then, well, it's just a matter of being able to do a forage quality analysis, right, on each batch of forage you're going to feed to a cow for protein degradability. And then you can balance the ration and make best use of the tannins and the undegradable protein, right? Well, but can we measure protein degradability properly? That's another problem. And I'm going to spend a little more time on this. And really what we're needing to do is not only measure rumen undegradable protein that's protected by tannin, but we need an estimate of indigestible protein that's coming out the back end of the animal. And by difference or by direct measurement, if there's other ways of doing it, we really want to get a handle on what is the digestible protein that's degraded and amino acids absorbed by the animal for production. That's really what we're we're after. We tend to just measure this and hope there's no problem with this, and we don't think about this too often in terms of planet-containing forages. So let's take a look at some of the assays that we have available, and I think hopefully you'll notice that we do have some issues here. I'm not going to get into much detail about the different methods. If you have questions, you can ask me later. One method that's often used is an in-situ method where forages are put into bags and then put into the rumen for differing periods of time, and then the amount of residual protein that's left is measured to give an indication of rumen undegradable protein. And in all the slides I'll be showing, we've got alfalfa as sort of a control, tannin-free, and then several birds for trefoil varieties that differ in tannin content. So these are just examples of several in-situ techniques. You might use a kinetic approach where you have multiple time points, fit a rate of digestion, and through various mathematical calculations, come up with a rumen undegradable protein estimate. So you get an idea that, yeah, tannins are increasing the amounts of rumen undegradable protein. You could do a single time point incubation. You can see the intercept and the slopes are somewhat different. And the relationships you get are also affected by whether or not you account for particles that float out of the bag, because these bags are porous to let rumen bacteria in. Well, it can also let protein out and protein-tannin complexes out. And so if you try to account for the particle fraction, you get differing relationships. This is without particle loss adjustment, and this is with a particle loss adjustment. So, okay, we're starting to get differing relationships depending on how you do the in-situ method. Well, how about in vitro methods? Well, there's a method recently out in the literature developed by Ross and colleagues at Cornell. It's an in vitro procedure, 16-hour incubation, collect the residues by glass fiber filters, 1.5 microns, so you're catching a lot of particles. And they're showing, you know, quite a different result here in terms of, yes, tannins are increasing rumen undegradable protein, but the axis has changed quite a bit. These numbers are much higher than what we're getting with the in-situ method. We might have some issues here with bacterial contamination inflating the values. There's another in vitro technique where you digest the forages for 0 and 2 hours, and you measure the products of digestion, in this case ammonia and amino acids. Those are measured to give an idea of how much the protein is being degraded. And you see, again, a different kind of relationship. Again, tannins are having an effect, but, you know, you're getting quite different results depending on what type of in vitro method you're using. You can also use protease methods, and there are many others I could go over, but I'll just mention this one quickly. Protease methods, Streptococcus protease, is very convenient to run. Sometimes it's run at pH 8. If you use pH 8, tannins have no effect. That's because at the higher pH, the tannin protein complexes dissociate, and guess what? The tannins aren't doing anything. So that's not the appropriate way to run that assay. If you drop the pH down to more physiological conditions in the rumen, 6.8, you do see an effect. But again, you know, the slopes, intercepts of all these are quite different. So got a lot of variation in what the different protein degradabilities or assays are telling you in terms of rumen undegradable protein. What about indigestible protein, what's coming out the back end of the animal? Well, acid detergent and soluble protein is probably one of the oldest methods. Cook up a sample in neutral and acid detergents, look at the residual protein, and here it's suggesting there's very little indigestible protein, whether you've got tannin-free alfalfa or birds foot trefoil. So I guess this is probably what you'd like to see, right? You'd like a very little indigestible protein in a forage, most of it being available to the cow. Well, how about some other methods? Well, you can take the residues from the in vitro procedure, one of them that I mentioned previously, or an in situ procedure, take those forage residues, incubate them with acid pepsin and intestinal enzymes, an array of those at a mildly alkaline pH to mimic gastrointestinal digestion. You can run forages through those methods, and you can see that they're coming up with quite different estimates of indigestible protein. So we've got ruminant degradable protein all over the map, indigestible protein all over the map. And then if you try from those to estimate protein that is digested and absorbed by the cow, you can see that we've got all kinds of relationships here, some even basically zero protein being absorbed. So I hope as you look at this, you get a sense of we've kind of got a mess in terms of protein degradability assays, and we've got to find a way to come up with some assays that are biologically, nutritionally relevant, not just something that's convenient to run in the lab. So I hope you've got a sense that if we're going to properly feed these tannin-containing forages, we need accurate, rapid, and cost-effective assays to run in labs, and they really have to be validated by in vivo data. We need to tie it to what the animal really sees and is doing with these forages so that we're grounded in some reality. And ultimately what we want to know is, you know, how much protein is being absorbed in the intestinal tract, how much is being taken up and used for milk production or growth or other needs of the animal. We can't just measure rumen undegradable protein. We have to look at the availability in the lower tract and try to do it more accurately. Some other needs are that we need to identify the optimal types of tannins, and we got a sense of that, how tannins vary so much in chemical composition and size. We'd like to know which are the optimal types to have in a forage to give us the type of protein protection and ultimately utilization that we're looking for. And a few other needs on my list here. Of course, we need to develop high-yielding cultivars that consistently produce the desired types and quantities of tannins that we need. And we need to get a good handle on how plant maturity, growth environment, conservation methods affect protein degradability and availability to cows. And once we understand these effects, we need to be able to evaluate and optimize diets to use these forages properly. And even though we didn't see much effect in our studies with manure applications on land and crop rotations of legumes and following forages, we ought to look at that aspect a little bit more too to see if we affect nitrogen cycling in crop rotations as well. And so the primary goal of all this work, of course, is to identify optimal characteristics and production systems for these tannin-containing forages. So thank you for your attention.
I have to take a question.
Swimming upstream. Are there any questions for John?
Yes.
Back to that slide you showed, just that initial study showing an increase in milk yield.
Yes.
What does that stand from, silage or hay?
Well, that was, I did mention that. It was birds for trefoil silage that we fed in that study. Yeah. Thank you.
John,
yes.
You talked quite a bit about dairy cows and confinement. Does this translate off to your dairy cows that are on pasture or with the beef cattle?
Well, I can't think of your name. Jennifer. Thank you. Jennifer is the one that could probably answer that a lot more than I could. There are a lot of the work that's been done, especially in New Zealand and now more so in Western states with Jennifer and other folks, have shown real benefits of feeding birds for trefoil and grazing systems for milk production, lamb, sheep production.
But in all fairness, we're comparing them.
Okay, yeah. And that's one of the challenges, is how do you find a suitable control forage to compare your tannin-containing forages to? In grazing systems, for example. Polyethylene glycol has been used to disrupt tannin protein interactions, but I think that has other effects too, which maybe would confound things a little bit. Isn't that what's in that stuff you have to drink when you get a colonoscopy? Well, anyway, yeah, that is a challenge. But at least compared to grasses, feeding birds with trefoil pastures, really a lot of benefits have been seen.
Thank you.
Thank you.